welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we have a very special guest waiting a while to talk to her. Her name is Allison Arngrim. She's from Little House on the Prairie, and she has written a new book called Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, How I Survived Nellie Olson and Learned to Love Being Hated. Hello.
Hello.
That's a long title.
I know. Well, it's, you know, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch is the title of my book, my one-woman show in the book. And you know, publishers love to have the title extensions. And I said, yes, as long as it kind of sounds like How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, the Dr. Strangelove thing.
Right.
And so How I Survived Nellie Learned to Love Being Hated was the closest I could get.
I must tell you, I was up all night reading this book the other night. It's one of those books that you just can't stop reading. I mean,
I love this. You know, I'm hearing this more and more. I get emails and Facebook messages of people saying, I went to read your book, and I wound up reading it straight through in 2 days and didn't sleep. What is this book doing to people?
I literally was up, I think, until 3 in the morning reading this. Because it's
one of the craziest things.
Well, the thing is, as the story progresses, we get to see more of your life, and it's kind of like we're peeking behind a curtain to see what went on in your life, and you've had a very unusual life.
Just a little, yeah.
Are there things that you... I mean, you basically are very open in this book.
Yes.
Very open. There's nothing that you hide in. You don't hide anything at all. I mean, you tell it straight, your life. You've had a very rough life.
Yeah, I've never been terribly secretive. I mean, I've always been fairly open. I know for a lot of actresses, it's really difficult. They keep so much a secret. They have such a veneer up that then to shift gears and go to the biography and try to talk about your life is really hard. I was, you know, pretty upfront with how I felt about things and who I was, but this was the opportunity to go, okay, now if there's anything I ever left out, here it is, just in case you weren't sure.
And I mean, with your brother and what happened, uh-huh. And this is a very delicate issue. I don't even know how to bring it up. But, I mean,
right, well, no, and I mean, at least there was some prelude to this, because since I've been working the last few years with PROTECT, or the National Association
right.
to Protect Children.
And what a wonderful thing you're doing. I really applaud you for that.
I love these guys. And well, there, in that case, I wound up on Larry King. And, you know, I see celebrities go on talk shows or TV shows and talk about having been abused and sexually abused as children, and I'm always kind of like, okay, but now why are you telling us? Because it's not therapeutic. Going on TV is not therapeutic. It's actually quite rough.
Right.
But therapy is therapeutic. Going on TV is brutal to talk about something
right.
personal. And
yet it seems so easy. We see people on TV all the time. That looks so easy. Just put a camera in front of somebody and you know, go to town. You know, but it isn't easy.
They're busy. They're making a show. They're worried about timing and ratings. And they're, none of these people are trained. So you have producers and assistants and the host sort of just asking you totally crass questions and going, can you move it along? It's not like therapy. It's kind of rough on a person. And
right.
I think if people aren't really prepared for that, if they don't have experience in TV, they really should, you know, rethink that idea. Because it's not like a good feeling. It's not a fuzzy, warm moment to go on TV and do it. And I'd always avoided that. I mean, I had talked about being abused. I had been in therapy. Certainly my husband knew. My friends knew. It wasn't one of those things where I had, you know, never told anyone in my entire life. I didn't tell anyone until I was a grown-up, but I told people since. But when we were fighting to change the laws in California to protect kids, and they kept saying no, and we were backed into a corner, it's like, well, we're going to have to go to the press and guess who's the most famous person in the room? That would be you. And I wind up on Larry King, and it's like, well, you're going to have to throw down. You're going to have to tell him the truth.
Well, what did that feel like to really let it out on Larry King like that? I mean, was that difficult for you to do, or did it come easy? It sounds like it came easy.
It was difficult, but I have had a background in TV. You know, I talk about in the book, I mean, I've been getting interviewed since I was 5, and being, you know, interviewed about Little House on the Prairie since I was 12, and been on every TV show known to man, and I tell a story in the book about being a little kid and finding out that
right.
magazines sometimes make stuff up about celebrities. It's not all true.
Right.
So I already had, you know, various cynical experiences with TV, and I'd been interviewed. I mean, I'd been on Geraldo. I'd been on everything already. So I knew how it worked. I knew that you had pre-interviews with producers. I knew that these people, you know, weren't here to coddle you, but to make a TV show. And you know, I compare it to the scene in Network when he says, why me? And it's still, because you're on television, dummy. And they were very clear to me at Larry King. They said, look, this is a great issue, and we want to talk about this. We want to talk about this law. But you were in people's living rooms. They feel they know you.
Right.
You're talking about this is more important. All right. And I knew I had to do it. And I think that it came out perfectly. It was really, really handled well. And it also worked. It absolutely worked like a charm. And we were back in Sacramento, and we got the law passed.
Right. That's great. That's great. You, and your story has a happy ending. I mean, you seem very, very happy right now.
I am. It's weird. I mean, I suppose I wasn't totally thrilled when I was sitting on the floor at baggage claim waiting to get my bags back.
No. It's always, life is on a lot of is in how you handle things. And you seem to handle things very well.
Bad stuff is going to happen. Terrible things are going to happen. People are going to die. Things are going to go wrong. Things won't always go your way. Terrible things happen to everybody at some point. If you're lucky, not too many of them happen at once. But bad stuff's going to happen. And if you decide that your life is only of value if every single thing goes your way and nobody dies and everybody likes you and nothing goes wrong, you're going to have a pretty rough trip.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny when you read the scenes on set and you describe the set, and it's so wonderful to listen to you describe the big sets, and we feel like we're on the set. That's what makes this book so much fun to read.
I'm so glad you said that, because I thought that's what people always say, what's it like, and I thought, well, I guess I should really tell people exactly what it's like. People are going to buy this book all over the world who've never been on a set or never going to be on a set, and people have these glamorous images of TV, of making a TV show from TV and movies, and yes, it is fun, and parts of it are glamorous, but they're also kind of like big grungy canning factories.
I mean, I
wanted to capture that.
I'm picturing the set with all the beer there.
and the beer and the cigarettes and the more beer.
Are all your memories from Littleton Prairie good ones, or do you have some bad memories there too?
Pretty much all around good. I mean, I describe it was so physically challenging, being out and seeing the heat and the getting up so early. It was very hard work some days. There were days where I was just drenched in sweat and exhausted, thinking, how did I get into this? What am I doing here again? So that was rough, and there were times where I'd just be so tired and having to go on. And 7 years of being trapped with the same people, we didn't always get along 24 hours a day, but we got along enough, and we'd make it up. I mean, that's when people say, gee, was your show like a family? Weirdly, yes. I mean, we did relate to each other. I mean, I was texting Melissa Gilbert from the airport. We were on the phone this afternoon when I was finally getting on my flight. She's like, where are you again? I said, I'm going to Atlanta. I just talked to her a few hours ago.
That's
terrific. We're still friends.
And she's such a sweet person, too. I mean, every time you see her on TV, she comes across as this very sweet, easygoing person. I mean, you never see her, get angry at anybody. I mean,
Gilbert?
Yeah.
Gilbert does. I mean, she's very down to earth, and she's definitely outspoken. She knows, I'm calling her by her last name. You think it was like a couple of frat boys. Yo, Gilbert, Iron Group.
Right.
And that's the thing. She is very down to earth, and she's a tough cookie. I mean, you don't survive being the president of the Screen Actors Guild for 2 terms and raise a bunch of kids and, not be fairly tough. But she is an absolute.
Well, that means you must be really tough to survive what you've survived.
Well, I guess I am.
You must. I mean, and even your I found myself just being so angry at your parents all through the book. I'm thinking, what is the matter with these people?
Yeah, they're pretty damn oblivious. I mean, what do you do? How do you describe that? And it's not uncommon. I talk to other people, everybody else who I know is oblivious. We kind of go, how does that happen? How do you shut down the part of your brain that says, hey, there's something wrong, somebody's doing something to this kid? How do you put your fingers in your ears and just go la 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 la? And not, but people do it. Every time you see on TV someone arrested abusing a kid. There was a guy just the other day.
Right.
He had already been charged. They were on their way to arrest him for molesting a 7-year-old girl. And he ran out and married her mom. I guess he figured maybe get a better deal and marry to the mother. And she married him. She knew he'd molested her daughter. She married him and not only brought the daughter to the wedding, she brought her along on the honeymoon.
There's no explaining.
And the cops just arrested him. And everyone's going, you almost want to interview this woman and go, okay, I give up. Why? What were you thinking? And it's very strange. I mean, now, she may be, in on the game, but there are these people who, denial's an amazing thing. When people make up their minds to pretend something isn't happening, it's amazing what they're willing to pretend isn't happening.
I just was talking recently to the guy who wrote the book on Karen Carpenter, talking about denial.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, powerful stuff there. But there is that sense of, But you are good friends with Melissa Gilbert. I mean, we remember the scenes on Wild Spread where you guys would fight and yell at each other, and she acted like she hated you, and you acted like you hated her. And it's hard to believe that you guys are so close. I mean, in your mind, it just goes to, well, wait a minute, they hated each other. How can they be close?
Grown people don't get this. It's so funny. As I always say, yes, we beat each other senseless for 7 years, and now we're best friends. I was at a party at Melissa's, and a grown woman who was in the industry actually said, when did you two start getting along? And Melissa and I were
so
like,
funny.
Wait, did we have a falling out? We forgot about, and I was like, oh, you mean on the show? It's like, well, didn't you two hate each other? Yeah, on TV. And people are quite stuck. Well, when she was running for president of SAG, they have that thing where you can bring in SAG members to be observers the day of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of her observers. And I come to sign in, and they go, well, who are you here for, Valerie Harper? I go, no, I'm here for Melissa Gilbert.
I guess it was a good thing you did get along with her. I mean, you didn't get along with Melissa Sue Anderson, obviously. Melissa, I would love to interview Melissa Sue Anderson. In fact, I asked to interview her, and she wouldn't even bother with me. But
which is funny, because, I mean, she's got a book out. She's getting interviewed everywhere else.
Right, but they declined. And for some reason, my first real big decline this year, and I was like, whoa, what's going on here? But, I mean, was she that difficult to get along with? Was she that distant?
She had this wall up, and I think kind of still does. And like I said, I don't really know what's going on. What's interesting is now that she has a book out, all these articles and interviews and press she did 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, are all popping up all over the internet. And you know, same thing's happened to me. People have found some of the most embarrassing photos of me over the last year now. Like, oh, let's dig this one up now that she's got a book out. And the same thing's happened to Gilbert and Ann Anderson, all the old articles. But it's interesting because there's some articles from like 79 which give more information about Melissa Sue's life than her entire autobiography. I just finally found out like her dad's name and what he did for a living. And it's so strange that you would be in such close quarters with someone, and the rest of us all shared information, knew all sorts of things about each other, but she made up her mind to not do this, and she's now sort of admitted that. She said she was very shy, but she's now, there's interviews where she's admitted that she made a decision, she wanted to keep it professional and not talk about a personal life, and just the act, which all sounds perfectly logical if she was talking about a job she had when she was 22. But she was 10. What does a 10-year-old girl go, I'm not going to talk to these people because I got to keep this professional? What is that? Who tells them to do that? Where is your mind at 10 that you say, I don't want to get too close to the people on the set?
Right, exactly.
I shudder to think what was going on, but I don't know, and I still don't know. Poor thing.
This picture,
it's pathetic in a way.
Right. This picture of you visiting the real Walnut Grove in 1992. What a beautiful picture that is!
Isn't that fantastic?
I mean, how do you capture a picture that look? I mean, you look so happy there. I mean,
I also look like Marilyn Monroe in that white dress.
No, but you look great. I mean, it's such a beautiful picture. I mean, it captures you in a great way.
And I had a lot of great shots in that Walnut Grove. It was a great trip. I had so much fun. I dipped my feet in Plum Creek, and then of course everyone was standing their camera, so I dunked myself in Plum Creek. I like fell in and screamed and everything. I tried to do that this time. I was just back in Walnut Grove a couple of weeks ago, and I went to the museum, and I went back to the creek, and I did dip my feet in, but it's much higher. They've had flooding, so I didn't actually climb in because I think I would have drowned. It's much deeper and stronger current now.
Right. The part where you describe when you went to your audition and didn't know you had to have curls, that's a classic. I mean, it's like, why does this not surprise me?
Right. Yeah, always the agents, they don't tell people things, and I'm like, sure, like, where are your curls, Colonel?
I mean, you could have lost the job right then and there. That could have been it.
I could have been fired.
I mean, and look, where would you have been without Little House on the Prairie?
And where would Little House on the Prairie have been without me being Nellie? I don't know if it would have worked if it had been somebody else.
But, I mean, I have such great memories of Nellie, even though, you know, there's trauma, of course, because I was almost your age. We're very close in age.
Oh, so I scared you silly, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. I must admit. But the great acting that you did, and there's no denying that you watch those shows, we feel this hatred toward you.
I love that. Okay, actors are always saying, I want them to think it's real. Actors are saying, I want them to really believe that I'm dying of cancer, or that I've been shot, or that I'm Italian, or that I'm blind, or deaf. That's what people want. They want it to be convincing that it's really happening, and that rarely happens. Mostly we watch actors and movie stars, and we say, oh, what a great performance. But we know it's them. We know it's that actor. And to say, well, I want them to really believe it's happening, it's very rare. And everybody says they want that. I apparently achieve that. It's the craziest thing. I have people go, well, I don't know if she was a good actor. She was just a bitch. And I'm like, no, actually, it was a performance. And I have a friend who I did a play with, this guy, Andy Steinland, and he's just a little younger than me, and he said the same kind of thing. He said it was very difficult. We first got cast in this play together. He said, I'm just a little younger than you, so you were an older girl when I was watching the show. He said, I had nightmares. I had terrible nightmares. Nellie Olson was going to come beat me up.
Your voice, I mean, is so much a part of you. I mean, I hear your voice, and I have all these flashbacks to the show. Cause my
right, even over the phone, it's kind of alarming, isn't it?
It's fun. I feel like I've gone back 30 years in time. It's like my sister would have to watch the show every Monday night. We had to watch Little House on the Prairie. It didn't matter what anybody else wanted to watch. And I did have wonderful moments watching the show. Yeah, I found it a little sappy. I'm sure, you know. Of course.
I was on it, and I found it a little sappy.
But I did enjoy it, and of course I cried like everybody else. I mean, every other minute you were crying about something. It seemed
there's more crying in that. I think that's why the French love it. It's so emotional and romantic. It drives them crazy.
But it's realistic, though. I mean, in certain ways, you know, people went through stuff like that. Maybe not a lot of people, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously in the 1800s, people say so many bad things happen on the show. I'm like, have you ever talked to anybody who lived on a farm in the 1800s? I mean, my dad lived on a farm in the Depression. It wasn't even the 1800s. They had locusts. They had prairie fire. They had tornadoes. People died of horrible diseases. This stuff happened. It was awful. And the 1800s were very hard, and I heard stories from my grandparents, and that's what went on. It was this constant daily struggle to survive.
When you were on the show, was there any, and you were being that way, were you like that in real life too? At all? Was there anything that you were...
Oh, no. The big joke was, I remember people would ask my mother, good Lord, what's she like at home?
Right.
And she'd say, well, by the end of the day, she's gotten it out of her system. She's quite mellow. And it's true. By the time I got home, I was usually exhausted. I'd come in the door and say, oh, good, and fall over and take a nap. No, I was in a great mood by the end of the day.
But it had to be... And they always talk about how much fun it is to play a villain. To
God,
be
the, it is.
And what is the most fun thing about it? I mean, why is it so much fun? I mean, what is it?
Is this sort of just gleeful pleasure of breaking the rules. I mean, yeah, well, one of the things had on the set, like, you have to be very good. You have to not break things. You don't want to break props.
Right.
And we had all these lovely antiques. And, you know, fate worse than death for the child that knocked over the actual antique vase that they might have borrowed to use for the show. And so you were constantly on watch to not do anything like that. And then they take me to set and they go, okay, when you throw the tantrum, break everything in this room. Picking up things, throwing them, I trash the room. It's that episode Bunny, pull the sheets off the bed, rip the paintings off the wall, throw the books, break this. And they actually went through and said, okay, this is real, don't break this. Break this, don't break that. But I, you know, go through and trash a room and get paid for it. And it's just like, haven't you ever wanted to trash a room? But you don't want to really trash a room because you'll have to clean it up and you might break something good. But to get told, no, it's perfectly okay. We set this whole room up just for you to destroy.
Did you ever get hurt off set from a fan who would accost you? I mean, I know they said things to you, but did they ever hurt you?
I didn't get injured. I did get kicked in the butt. There were the girls I talked about at the fair who kicked me in the butt the pavement. Luckily, I guess all the petticoats and everything burnt my fall. Couldn't get up, though. The person who, in the Santa Claus Lane Hollywood Christmas parade, threw an orange soda at my head, luckily it was in a plastic cup. So I got wet, and it was alarming, but I wasn't injured. I understand Justin Bieber just got hit with a plastic bottle on stage. I know how he feels now.
What is fame? I mean, what was fame really like for you? I mean, was it a shock at first, or did you? Your parents were already famous, so
right. My whole family was famous, so I was used to having people be famous, and I'd ridden in parades, and I'd been interviewed. So the concept of family, everybody was famous. But then when I was famous as a villain, it was a little weird. Now, I liked villains. I was sort of excited. Like, oh, I'm playing the villains. This is great. It's like being a horror movie star.
Right.
So I was sort of relishing that. But then as I saw that, I was genuinely scaring people. It's like, well, this is kind of fun. And here I was, the shy one, and I was intimidating people and frightening to them. And then as things got nutty, that was a little surreal, that I was making people so mad that they would freak out at the sight of me. And I thought, okay, I'm going to have to get my act together here because this is going to go on. I did clue in right away. This isn't going to end. if I've got this strong an emotional reaction, this isn't something that's going to go away. And I was right, because I still, like I talk about in the book, the woman coming up to me, you know, 30 years later, I forgive you.
That's a wonderful thing about your book. There's so many good stories in it. I mean, it's like, it's one thing, after, like, everybody wants to know, what was it like to be on Little House? Everybody must have been so great on that show.
People ask me questions constantly, so I had to write it. But I still have people give me this look, and the look I get when I get recognized, I think most famous people, when they get recognized, someone turns to look and their eyes go wide and they smile and go, oh, it's her. People turn and they see me and I see their eyes go wide, and then there's this look of pure terror crosses their face, and then they look like they're about to get very angry or cry, and then they go, oh, and then they take their breath and go, oh, it's the woman who played Nellie, and then they smile. But it's the strangest reaction, because you see the recognition, and then you see this, like, total rage and horror. Sometimes it's only for a second, and they come to their senses and go, oh, it's Nellie Olson. But it's the funniest thing to see someone go, oh, it's you.
Right. You know, it's weird, because I grew up watching Land of the Giants, too, and your brother, so I know you and your brother, and I think to myself, that nice little kid in Land of the Giants?
And that's the thing. Look at how often we see child stars on TV, and we think, what could go wrong? And we find out they're incredibly screwed up. I mean, right. Jay North, while he was playing Dennis the Menace, he's now talked about that his parents had sort of sent him off to stay with some manager couple, sort of similar to the thing that happened with Patty Duke. And he was being abused by them. He was having a horrible time. He was completely miserable. And here he was playing this incredibly almost cheesy, it was so perfect and sweet, you know, Dennis the Menace show with this pesky little boy.
Right.
And he was so just cartoonishly happy. And actually, he was completely miserable. And it took him years in adulthood to get it together.
Absolutely. But and all through this book, it's amazing how little anger I feel that you have. I mean, I know you had some, but you were not constantly angry, or it didn't appear
that way. I've been angry. I sometimes am angry.
I mean, do you talk to your brother anymore?
No.
I don't think
he cares.
Do you even know where he is?
Oh, yeah.
You do know where he is?
Same place he's always been.
Yeah,
Canada. He doesn't go anywhere.
I just was curious. What? It didn't seem like you were, but I wanted.
It's the thing. It's like there's being angry, and then there's just like sitting around seething. And I think that's because you like have you don't know what to do. You have no way out of it.
Right.
You've been wronged, and you see no recourse. And whereas clearly I've had recourse, and I'm not sitting here going, oh, he's done this to me and I can't tell anyone, or he's done this to me and it's, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. Nobody understands that it's bad. Well, no, everybody understands that it's bad. It's, you know, and no, he doesn't get to do anything like this to me anymore, treat me like crap anymore, and I can tell anybody I like. So it's not the sitting there with a lid on it, and yeah, I'm appalled at what happened to me, but it's like everything else in my life. Okay, now what? Well, yes, that happened, and now what are you going to do?
Right.
And in this case, I'm helping an awful lot of other people.
Were there anybody, and you don't have to name names, anybody on the whole cast that you absolutely could not even stand to be in the same room with?
God, no, nobody like that. That's the thing. I mean, the amount, I would say cast a Little House and cast a Gilligan's Island were probably the two casts that got along best of anybody in television, and maybe the Carol Burnett show.
And you realize that's amazing, too, because you always hear about these fights among the set. I mean, fights over salaries or whatever, you know, whatever.
Oh, no, most TV shows, they cannot bloody stand each other. Most television, it's unbelievable. See, we found this out, gosh, it must have been the fifth or sixth year. We were over at MGM. We'd moved from Paramount. And some people working on another show up the road came over to visit our set. And they said, you guys are so spoiled. We said, what? They said, this place is like paradise. You guys are disgusting. You all like each other. And we said, oh, no, not all the time. We start carrying on about somebody had a fight with somebody. And these guys laughed. They said, you really have no clue, do you? Do you know, they said, other sets, people practically have restraining orders against each other. They literally
is that bad?
Do not speak to each other. They cannot be in a room. People are screaming at each other. Said, you guys, your idea of a big fight is you don't want to eat lunch at the same table with somebody for an afternoon. really. It's like you guys are like in the third grade.
Now, Melissa Gilbert's brother was on the show. And
yes, Jonathan Gilbert. He played my brother.
And her sister, Sarah, has been on 24 and a bunch of different things.
Everything. Well, she was the Miss Roseanne. She was the daughter on that.
On
everything, yes.
But, and you know, it's just amazing. Every time I turn around, it seems like Melissa had another brother or sister.
Right?
It's like, wow, look at these people.
And you do need, like, a scorecard to figure out the Gilbert family. Because what you had was, you have to go through her whole book and my book to figure it all out. You had Barbara married Paul Gilbert, and they adopted Melissa and Jonathan, and then they divorced, and she married Harold and gave birth to Sarah.
Oh.
And then she divorced Harold and married, like, I don't know, I think like 8 other people.
What?
I forget. I once asked Melissa something about which stepfather was who, and she said something like, nah, after I left home, they're just my mom's husbands. I don't have to keep track. But yeah, the mother was married many, many times, but Sarah was the daughter of Harold Abelis, the second husband, and Melissa's parents were divorced before the show, and then her dad died when she was very, very young. So it was pretty rough.
Well, the thing is, when you and her used to do these little things, get into mischief, and they're fun. They're really fun to read about in the book. But Melissa always seems like this take charge type of a person. Like
very. That's what's astounding. As a little girl, I mean, a little girl, a teeny little thing, you're small for her age too.
Mm-hmm.
She always had this take charge thing. She, you know, she'd done the pilot in one episode, and then she's like, okay, here's what we're gonna do, and it's like, aren't you like 9? And she did. She always had a take charge thing.
Did she ever direct?
Being in control. Yeah, she did. She did later direct a TV movie.
And okay.
I remember it was like My Hormone.
It wasn't The Miracle Worker.
No, she didn't direct. No, she was only like, 12? She didn't direct Miracle.
No.
She didn't direct herself at 12. But
yeah, that would be kind of young, wouldn't it?
But she did later in her 20s. I know she directed at least one TV movie and I think a short film.
Do you have any regrets in your life at all?
I don't know, probably. I mean, I think about, you know, my ex-husband. I kind of go, that's a real smack yourself in the forehead, go, what was I thinking? But, you know, I always say there's a lot of the things that go, seemed like a good idea at the time. He seemed like a really good bet on paper. There were lots of people. I mean, we had a lot of people at the wedding. They all went, yes, this is a great idea. And now it's like, what were we all thinking? And I can't believe that, like, my husband I'm married to now, I've been married to for 17 years.
Right.
And it's the same thing. My husband, Bob, he had an ex-girlfriend. He's like, what was I doing? And we sort of wonder why we weren't married to each other much, much sooner.
We all do stupid things, don't we?
Yes.
Not that I'm calling you stupid. I don't
want
you to
think that. Oh, no. Well, you know, my husband and I, we first got together, we play a game called Who's a Bigger Dummy? We'd discuss our previous relationships and try to guess which one of us had been dumber.
Was it painful at all to write the book? I mean, was there anything painful about it?
Yeah, there were sections where it was hard to write, but I guess I was very...
Give me an example, if you can.
Well, I was very determined. I said, I'm going to do this, and this is
it. Well, you did it really well. It's such smooth writing. That's what amazes me the most. I mean, you write like you've done it all your life.
I mean, I wrote in fits and starts and huge chunks. Obviously, there was editing because, I mean, I think I wrote 130,000 words or something ridiculous when I finished it. So there were many things that cut, and there was some work in having to consolidate a couple of chapters.
And I found myself getting very mad at Michael Landon, too, in a couple of spots.
He was a very volatile personality, made people kind of kooky.
Perfectionist, definitely?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Luckily, he usually achieved it, so it was like, oh, okay. I mean, that's the thing. He would do this I'm always right thing, but then he'd direct a scene, and I'd sit there and think, well, he is right. That is a good idea. Oh, all right, just shrug and
so
go along.
So he really had a sixth sense about what was needed.
He did. He completely knew. He was absolutely... Hold on, my other phone's going off there. He was absolutely brilliant. He tapped into some emotional thing in the American consciousness and just nailed it perfectly. And he knew what he was doing. And at one point, I kind of went, this guy's on to something. He knows what he's doing. If he comes up with something that sounds crazy, let's just not ask. Let's do it. There were parts of the book are painful. I know writing about Steve's death, that always hurts.
Yeah, you did a lot for him. That was wonderful.
And I wrote about that. And then writing about the abuse, like, whoa, this is the most detail I've gone into. Well, just got to lay it out. And then the weird thing was, I was almost completely done with the book. I was done. We sort of handed it off. And then they called and said, look, you know, we're finishing up the edits. And we realize your father just died in December, but we need, like, a closer. Do you mind writing in the whole, like, epilogue, last chapter, about your father dying?
Oh, boy.
And I said, you know, if it was anybody else, no, but since it was him, yes, this is the sort of thing he'd like.
So you still loved your parents, even up till the end?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't approve
of no, certainly
what
not.
They did. I mean, that's, you know, that's insane. I think that one thing I try to explain about is, like, they were actors, they were very interesting people. Not really great parents, very interesting people. People, if you met them at a cocktail party or they were friends of your friends, you'd want to invite them everywhere. But you might not leave your kids or your dogs or a potted plant with them and expect it to get taken care of for the week.
Right, exactly. Somehow they comfort me to know that you, up to the end, you still got along with your parents. I would hate to see that everything ruined like that, because something like what happened to you could destroy a whole family.
And it wasn't a normal relationship. It wasn't the relationship that I eventually, that I did have with them. It wasn't the way.
It doesn't sound like it was ever normal.
It wasn't, exactly. And I think that's when I sort of like went sane, when I went, okay, none of this is normal, and you need to stop expecting it to be.
Yeah.
I can't say, I mean, the conversations in my whole life that I had with my father were nothing like the conversations that anyone I know has with their dad. Yet, that also meant that there were conversations I had that people wish they could have had with their dad.
Right. You worked, and you had a lot of really famous guest stars on Little House on Prairie, too.
Indeed, indeed. In fact, we're just talking about Patricia Neal.
Right.
Okay. Oh, man, Patricia Neal. She did that big episode with Remember Me.
Right,
and
right.
It was where she's dying and the kids get adopted. And interestingly enough, that was the episode where it was the poem that Michael wrote in the script where she recites Remember Me with
right.
smiles and laughter, which they read at Michael's funeral, ultimately became his epitaph.
Wow. That's
But Patricia Neal was incredible. I was talking about it the other day because people were saying, well, we all want our Patricia Neal quote. She's just died and blah, blah, blah. She did a thing when she was on the set of Little House. Remember, you know, she'd had those multiple strokes.
Yeah.
She'd learned to speak and walk and everything all over again.
Right.
And although she had, she was constantly testing and retesting and training her memory. In fact, they were constantly worrying about her. When she did her big scene in the church with her big monologue, they had teleprompters for days and all this stuff ready. And, of course, she didn't use them, and she was very proud. And she had the whole thing down. But she was constantly checking in. She played a game with us kids. She made us think it was a game. But it was life and death for her. She was checking her mind. She would say, now, what's your name, dear? Uh-huh. And what's your birthday? So I'm Allison. January 18th. She'd go, oh, January 18th, same as Cary Grant. And she'd ask us her name and her birthday, and then tell us which movie star our birthday was closest to.
Oh, how cool was that?
And then, like, 3 days later, she'd be in the middle of something. She would go, Allison, and it's January 18th, same day as Cary Grant. And I'd say, yes, fantastic. And she would do this all day long. Turn to what I remember, your name is so-and-so, and you're the one who's the birthday of Humphrey Bogart. And she would just rattle this off, and we thought this was cute. But those of us who were older, I was kind of catching on what she was doing, because later I got home and my family and everyone said, you know, Patricia Neal didn't know how to talk at one point. And I realized what she was doing.
Wow.
And Melissa Gilbert even talked about it just the other day. She said her dad, Paul Gilbert, had a stroke by then. He'd been ill. And her family wouldn't tell her, because she was so young, what a stroke was, what was wrong with him.
Oh.
And Patricia Neal did.
Oh, good for her.
She had given her a doll, and they talked. She said, oh, here's what happened to me. Oh, yeah, that thing happened to your father. Well, here's what it is, and explained what a stroke was and everything.
I'm curious about your relationship with Karen Grassley. She's mentioned in the book, but not in any depth. Did you have much interaction
yeah,
with her?
Yeah, I didn't get to spend as much time with her as I wanted, obviously, because I was off with the Olsons all the time.
Right.
Karen is a fabulous woman, very, very sweet. I would say that Karen Grassley's probably greatest flaw is she worries too much. She takes things on. I remember thinking, this woman apologizes every 5 minutes. She used to sometimes think everything was her fault. I wanted to take her aside and go, you can't possibly be responsible for everything. I said, I don't think you're responsible for, like, World War II.
She does have that face. That face is just priceless. I mean, it conveys so much emotion, as does yours.
Yeah, very emotional woman. But the sweetest thing, if anything, her biggest fault was she'd go, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yes, it's all my fault. Like, no, it's not. That wasn't your fault.
Well, what was the relationship between Melissa Gilbert and Melissa Sue Anderson? What was their relationship like?
Well, that was pretty rough because, I mean, if I had a problem with Melissa Sue, I didn't have to spend half the time with her as poor Melissa Kilbert. Here they were playing sisters.
How did she get through that? My gosh, it sounds like it was...
I think it was hard on her. I think what happened was, is because there's an age difference, and I think Melissa Gilbert, because she didn't have an older sister, that when she got this role, she went, jackpot, I got a series, and I'm going to have an older sister who's going to be my older sister and teach me things and come to my house and be my best friend.
Right.
Oh, and she's beautiful and blonde, and oh, she'll teach me how to do my nails and do my hair. We'll go to the beauty parlor. And Melissa Sue went, no, I don't really want a kid sister, and I think of you as a stupid tag-along.
Wow.
And Melissa Sue didn't want a kid sister and was just like, beat it, scram. And I think she really, really like took that like a sock in the jaw, because she sort of latched on to me. Wait, well, you're blonde and fabulous and older than me, and you could be my big sister. And I thought the idea of having a kid sister was fabulous. I went, sure, welcome aboard.
It's interesting that a lot of people that were child actors and now are grown, sometimes they don't want to talk about their role part. But you, I mean, you're playing it up. You had this show. How long have you been doing the show, and how long does it last? And it sounds like you're getting quite a response.
Well, I was doing stand-up for years as a teenager, but things really turned around for me in 2002, like I described in the book. I was doing stand-up off and on, and I had some success with that. I guess it was fairly funny, and I'd done the road, and I'd done gigs. But boy, oh boy, when I went to New York in 2002, I said, I got to do something else. And I turned it into all true stories. I had some true stories from my life and my act, but then I had a lot of, like, classical stand-up stuff where, oh, I have a joke about something. I chucked it all out the window. The whole thing now is all true stories. When I did that, I killed like nobody's ever killed it before. And I said, well, I'm not going to do the old act. I'm just going to do this thing with the stories and the question and answer segment. And a lot was about the prairie, and other stuff was about my family. And I kept, well, I just kept expanding on that, and it got better and better. And then I added the video and photos, where now I get up and I talk about Liberace, and I have a picture of me and Liberace when I was a little girl. People just go crazy. They go nuts. I did the three shows in Vegas, and I'm heading back to Vegas on Thursday and doing it again.
Do you look forward to that?
Oh, I do. I do have a good time. My friends were asking me, and I think, do we get the impression you're having a good time up there? Is that an act? I'm having a good time up there.
Yeah, you don't seem like you're nervous in front of a camera at all.
Not really. I don't have stage fright. I used to. I mean, in various times in my life, I've had horrendous stage fright.
But you seem fearless completely, too. I mean, is there anything
that's
you're afraid of? No, I don't know. It comes through really loud talking to you.
That's training. You can sort of talk yourself into anything.
Well, name one thing you're afraid of.
Oddly, it's public speaking. I know, that's hilarious.
Public speaking, come on.
Right? Do you know it's everyone's greatest fear? People would rather do anything than public speaking. It's like the number one. Yeah, I do. It's not that I don't get nervous. It's that I've sort of trained myself to go, okay, we're going to go do this and take the deep breath and then kind of throw a switch and make it happen. And on stage, it's not so bad. There's all sorts of these acting tricks and ways of thinking about it where you just don't have the stage fright anymore, and I've sort of tricked myself now out of having stage fright there. It's still kind of a doozy speaking, like on talk shows or in front of, I'll tell you, talking to those people in Sacramento in front of the Senate was not exactly a walk in the park.
Well, you're easy going here. You don't seem to be afraid of me at all.
No, I guess
I'm more afraid of you.
Yeah, right. Well, maybe that's the trick. Maybe it's because I was Nellie Olson. I know that enough people are terrified of me.
Well, you have
the upper hand.
I mean, I can tell this by talking to you. You have a wonderful personality. I mean,
oh, thank you.
But you're so easy to talk to. I thought to myself, what if I talked to her and she starts to get really mean to me? What am I going to do? You know, I mean, these things go through your mind. You never know.
Oh, I know. Well, we have used it. I was in line for a concert once with some friends, and we had tickets at Will Call, but just like it was a mob scene, and we're thinking, oh man, what do we do? And they said, well, should we work the celebrity angle? Should we go up and say, don't you know who she is? And I'm like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to say, don't you know who I am? That's just idiotic. I'm not going to do it. And they said, okay, but we could do it. So one of them went up to the window and said, you know, we're stuck behind your line. We have this actress with us, you know, Alison Ark. And they would not only invoke the celebrity. She then said, well, you know, she was Nellie Olson, and I think she's getting a little upset and impatient about the wait. And they implied that I was going to have some sort of Nellie.
They expect it from you because they've seen you do be like that.
Right. And, of course, these people didn't know. They bought it. They went, oh, my God, and, like, got us the ticket.
But how did you become such a great actress? I mean, it's almost like you taught yourself. You determined you were going to do the best job you could do, and then look what came out of it. I mean, everybody.
Right. Well, that's true, because when you look at the fact when I got the job, I was, you know, 11, 12 years old. It wasn't like I'd had lessons. I mean,
you had done commercials, right, before that?
I had done commercials. I'd done a movie, but I hadn't played anything as dramatic as Nellie. And it's true. I mean, over the years, God, I've been in every kind of class and improv class and workshop and theater thing going. So it's one thing if I could do it now, but I am kind of going, how the heck did I do that then? You know, I'd certainly seen a lot of great actors, and I guess I paid attention. And it's funny because having since gone and, like, studied, you know, actual acting methods, I now look back at Little House and go, oh, damn, I was doing it right.
Right.
I had tapped into something, and...
It must be weird to look at those episodes and see yourself at 12 years old and say, what
the hell? But I do enjoy... when I was at the Walnut Grove Museum, just as I said, just a couple weeks ago, they have this whole expanded museum now with all these exhibits about the show.
Now, were you with it with some of the cast with you, or was it just
no,
you?
No, this was just me. It was Prairie Days. Dean Butler had been there the weekend before.
How's he doing?
I was there selling the book and everything.
Right.
And they have this whole big thing, and they have stuff on the musical and stuff on all the actors. And they have a big TV in the corner that's continuously running DVDs of Little House on the Prairie. So I'm walking around, they're showing me the museum, and it was like the episode where I tell Laura she smells like a dirty horse. And, you know, I stopped in my tracks, and I went, wait, I like this part. They were worried as to what I was going to do, like walk in and see myself on the TV, and I was like, wait, this is the good part, and found myself stopping to watch myself be horrible.
Right.
And I was just, I find myself still taking, like, gleeful pleasure in watching it.
How is Dean Butler?
Oh, Dean Butler is fabulous. He has his own company. He makes documentaries. He's made several interesting documentaries, and currently is got a documentary he's doing all on the life of the real Laura Ingalls, the Laura Ingalls legacy, and how her life and her writing has impacted the world, like, well, through this series and everything else.
That's really cool. But everybody on the cast seems to have grown up and done some wonderful stuff.
We've all done some pretty clever stuff. I think one of my favorite people for success stories is Linwood Boomer, the guy with Mary's gorgeous blind husband.
That's right.
Hello, Malcolm in the Middle. Okay, I think he's got us all beat with that one.
And then Catherine...
He wins the prize for most success.
Right, and then Catherine McGregor, who is a force, too. I mean, she was... It was almost like an older version of you watching this show.
Oh, she's fantastic. What, that woman's a genius. And she's not working.
Does she ever hold back at all?
No.
Never.
That was the thing. In fact, when I first started, I was a little hesitant, being Nellie. No, as Catherine, of course, never held back. And that was the thing, is that I remember once Claxton even saying, don't, no, really, just let loose. Don't hold back, really. If you're bottling something up, don't. And I was like, oh, I don't want to overdo it. And he's like, look, I know you've heard me tell Catherine to tone it down a little. He says, but for God's sakes, look at her.
Right.
He's like, you're not going to overdo it. He says, if you ever overdo it, I'll let you know. He says, but really, go ahead. What, like, you don't see her holding back. We have to tell her to rein it in, for God's sake.
I remember when they had a Little House on Prairie week on Hollywood Squares, and she was on, and I thought, I've got to see this woman of character, what she's really like, because she's such a vicious woman on the show.
And she's delightful, isn't she?
Yeah, I thought, well, that can't be the same woman. It's got
to
be somebody else.
Mad at the Hatter, of course.
Well, you weren't on that week, were you?
No, I didn't get it. No, Catherine, terribly eccentric. I mean, she is absolutely bonkers, like Mrs. Olsen. But the sweetest thing, oh, yes, charming and delightful. It's just, you just kind of go, huh?
That's not the same person.
Right.
But you got along pretty well with her. I mean, from all I read in the book, you got along just fine with her.
Oh, I did. I mean, well, like I said, very motherly. Now, she does get her bossy side going, and
right.
She does want to be, she wants to be everyone's mother, and she will. She'll tell you what to eat, what to wear, where to go. It's my favorite is when she tells people, like, how to get to her house and gives them driving instructions, if it's raining, what street not to take. I mean, she's definitely a micromanager.
Now, you did some other movies. You did Fantasy Island. I know you did a movie with Marie Osmond, and that's
in
the book.
I married Wyatt Earp. I could have done another, like, three chapters on stories from the set of I Married Wyatt Earp.
Yeah, Marie Osmond bothers me for some reason. She seems so sweet, but I sense something underneath.
Right, and she's another one where you go, oh, well, if you watch TV, you think she's this sweet, vapid, innocent thing. But this movie, I Married Wyatt Earp, she was producing it. She'd hired everyone. She was the executive producer. She picked the director and all of the people. She was completely in charge. She's a very, very savvy businesswoman. She is extremely smart. She has this absolutely devastating wit. She can tear you to shreds if she feels like it, all with a smile on her face and without swearing, because she is a good Mormon.
Right. Wow. That's great.
That's what's so funny. When my mother and I left for location, and I said, oh, my God, 3 weeks in the desert with Marie Osmond, and my mother said, oh, fine, I'm coming along. I'm going to be stuck with all of Osmond.
Wow.
We got along like you would not believe. Marie and I just had the best time, and
my mom started
hanging out with her mother, and my mother said, who knew? Olive Osmond is this incredibly educated woman. She's brilliant. We're sitting around discussing books and history.
Is there anything that happened on the show that you can't write about, that you can't talk about?
On the set? Nothing. Everybody, I talked about everyone and their beer.
No vicious murders or...
nobody killed anybody. I'm safe to say no one killed anyone. Nobody hit anybody other than on camera.
You know, one of the episodes I remember most, and for some reason I don't know why I remember this one, is the one where the woman thinks that Laura is her child.
Oh, that was wonderfully creepy. That was a disturbing episode, yes.
And I think, was it Hermione Gingold that played the mother? Or somebody famous played the mother. I can't remember.
Because we later had Hermione Badley on, but she played the kooky Kezia woman. Yes, but that woman who played, yes, she thinks she said she's the daughter. That was very creepy.
It's one of those episodes, when once you see it, it just stays with you. Like, wow, that could really happen.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. Pretty much everything happened in our show was based on some kind of truth, something, and you could see it happening. Well, of course, I always joke that baby Carrie was actually prophetic.
Right.
Because she fell in a well before baby Jessica, and she got lost in a runaway hot air balloon before the Mylar balloon.
Isn't that weird? It's like
she
prophetic.
Was a balloon girl.
It was almost... Whatever it is,
baby Carrie did it first.
Where do you see yourself in the next 20 years?
Oh, my God. You know, somebody had one of those quizzes on, like, Facebook, like, what do you want to see in 10 years? And I said, I'll be performing a show I haven't written yet in a language not yet discovered and touring with my new band playing a musical instrument that is yet to be invented.
Do any more acting besides what you're doing on the stage?
Yeah. I mean, because I've got the one-woman show, and then I also do theater and things. I have a marvelous character about 2 years ago. It's a play called Flirting with Morty, and I played the ghost of the dead, evil, abusive mother.
Oh, that must have been fun.
I was terrified. This woman is telling her story of abuse, and I'm her dead mother who comes back to harass her further. I did that, and then I did a movie called Make the Yuletide Gay.
Oh.
It's dreadfully funny. I kind of have a Mrs. Olsen part. I've sort of grown up to the Mrs. Olsen range.
Has that aired yet?
Oh, gosh, yes. It's out on DVD and on Netflix and everything, and it's a little independent film, and it's just darling, and it's this guy who comes home from college, and he hasn't come out to his parents yet. And it's Will He Come Out at Christmas, and it's a comedy, and it's actually like a heartwarming family gay comedy. And I'm his ex-girlfriend's mom, who lives next door, and is totally the Mrs. Olsen of the neighborhood.
See, I'm amazed. I know somebody who has gone through what you've gone through, and they're totally different. I mean, they're really moody. I'm wondering if you ever got suicidal or you got depressed because of all this. I mean,
absolutely. I've been miserable. I mean, that's why, you know, I did wind up going to therapy. Or, well, as I said in the book, it wasn't that I really wanted to kill myself. I just wanted to stop feeling like I should.
Absolutely. But you're truly an amazing success story. I mean, and you write really well, too. The book's fun to read. I mean, this is just a fun book to read.
And it does, you know, it takes determination, but that's what I'm saying. I hope that there are people who are getting something out of this that, like, okay, you know, like, bad stuff can happen, but it's not the end. You can still go on, and, you know, there's an old line about it's never too late to have a happy childhood.
And one thing I didn't ask...
I'm a real believer in that.
Right, absolutely. One thing I didn't ask you was... Were you planning on writing this book for years, or did it just come about, or did somebody ask you to write, or how?
Oh, definitely planning for years. It's sort of been a running joke with my friends and family for years.
The reason I ask that is because Todd Bridges wrote his book, and Mackenzie Phillips, and...
Well, and the two Melissas, everybody from Little House cranked out a book one after the other, bang.
Right.
Melissa Gilbert, Melissa Umai all came out, like, what, right in rapid succession.
Right.
And, no, I've been working on it for years. I mean, it was a whole joke, like, how's the book going, was a running joke for years. And I probably really, some of the stuff in this, I know I started writing right after Michael Landon died. I wrote some stuff about his death, how it affected me. I did write about that at the time, thought, this is important, this means something. And I was writing articles about AIDS in the 80s. A couple short articles got published, and I thought, there's something, I should be writing this stuff down. And then... In 2002, when I was doing the one-woman show, I thought, you know, I should write the full length of some of these stories. Just write them all out. I'm telling the short version of the show. It's very funny. But I should really write about the actual incidents in full length. And so I did. So I started racking up little chapters and sections, and I had a synopsis. And I know, I wasn't sure what I was going to call it. I remember for a while I thought of calling it Being Nelly.
I imagine Michael Landon. Now, this story about after you broke your arm and he said what he said to you, he must have got you the tears at some point.
No, actually, I'm trying to think Michael Landon never really upset me. No. There were times, I mean, I remember being bummed, like, when my face would break out on the set, because I was having, you know, problems with acne and stuff. But if actually the only two people who said anything rude to me about my skin were Melissa Gilbert and Catherine McGregor.
Oh, really? Bluntness can be tough to deal with sometimes.
Right? You know, Michael, though, he was actually pretty good. I mean, I saw him go off on a couple people, but it's like, man, they had it coming. I mean, one of my favorite times he went berserk was... We were filming the dream sequence boxing scene with me and Melissa boxing in the Bill Hill boxing room. And I fall flat on my back. And I lean over and I look, and right next to me, sticking up through the mat, is like this 4-inch nail. It's a nail sticking like point up through the mat.
Oh,
I'm like,
goodness.
Had I fallen down 6 inches to my left, I would have been effectively crucified.
Oh, my word.
And I looked at him and went, whoa, glad I didn't fall there. And Michael saw it and went bananas. Now, I would think that would be a good time to go bananas if you're the producer and director. And he said, he screamed at the guys who built the thing. He said, I want you on your hands and knees to go over every inch of this thing, find any nail pin. My God, you could have killed her.
Right.
And yes, he yelled and screamed.
So
and
he
swore.
Did. He did care about you a lot.
You're right. You know, so here he was, you know, ready to strangle people over my possibly having been injured or killed. So,
right.
You know.
Do you get recognized walking down the street today?
I do. I get recognized over the phone.
Really?
Well, you're it's really weird. I'll be making like a plane reservation or talking to the credit card company. And they'll go, excuse me, but were you Nellie Olson?
Really? That must be weird.
But that's I guess
you're
used. When they recognize you over the phone, you know you're in trouble.
But I guess you're used to it. I mean, you've been through a lot, so I guess...
It all bemuses me. I mean...
Nothing surprises you anymore, I wouldn't
right?
say.
Right. It's hard to be shocked at this point. I mean, if somebody asked me a question when I do my question and answer segment in the stand-up show, they said, what do you think about when you are awake at 3 a.m.? I said, well, I do sometimes lie awake and go, somebody somewhere on Earth is watching Little House on the Prairie right now.
And for some reason, the question that's running through my mind right now is, I wonder if she's religious.
Kind of. I would say, I mean, people, they always do these things. They say, I'm spiritual, not religious, and didn't just Anne Rice just announce she quit Christianity?
Right.
Because people at her church were being obnoxious, basically. She actually didn't quit Christianity. She said she still believes in God. Well, I think she quit organized religion, and who can blame her?
So you sort of are, but you're not.
I do. I actually... I have attended church. I had a religious wedding. I was married. We had a minister and everything with Bible readings. And I'm technically an Episcopalian. What does an Episcopalian say? This is the church that I currently don't show up at.
Yeah, I talked
to. Bad about going to church.
I talked to your husband earlier, and I so wanted to ask him what you were like, and I thought, no, that's tacky. I'm not going to do that.
Well, what did he always tell people? Nellie Olson lives for every morning for 10 minutes until the first cup of coffee.
What are you? I mean, you're just such a fantastic person. I mean, you have such a vibrancy and an energy to you that's just wonderful to listen to. I mean, you're just one of those people that I feel like I could just talk to for hours and enjoy it.
Cool. Well, see, just come see my ad. Well, the ad runs, as I think you asked about the show, how long it runs, about an hour and a half, depending how long Q&A goes.
Right. I mean, it sounds like a wonderful show. I've watched some of it on YouTube, and it's just wonderful.
Oh, great, yeah.
And will you ever write another book, do you think?
Oh, God, yes. I have so many chapters that I couldn't cram into this one, and you'd have had to, you know, have a hand truck to wheel it out of the store if I put it all in. So my working title is Confessions to No Rest for the Wicked.
Oh, that's great. And how do you know Andrew Vox?
Well,
he's a very famous thriller. I almost dropped the book when I saw it. I said, she knows Andrew Vox. He's a mystery writer.
Yeah. Well, he's also a lawyer who specifically works with children in the court system in New York. And he also is the founding member of PROTECT, the National Association of PROTECT Children.
Oh, I didn't know
PROTECT
that.
PROTECT was founded by a whole group of lawyers, cops. I think we had an attorney general, a couple psychologists, people like Joel Dvoskin, you've probably heard of Dr. Bruce Perry.
Mm-hmm.
He's come up a lot, like Oprah calls Dr. Bruce Perry when he's having a problem.
Okay.
He, the Child Trauma Academy, He's head of that. Dr. Bruce Perry, the Child Trauma Academy, VAX, Devoskin, all these fabulous doctors, lawyers, social workers, cops, who were working in child protection and found themselves getting frustrated every step of the way. You know, they'd go through the process. They got to the point where they had kids who were willing to tell. And then they actually got the police to step in and arrest the guy. And they got the prosecutor to actually take the case. And the kid actually testified. And they actually got a conviction. And then through some bizarre loophole, the guy is walking out the courthouse door, and he's not going to jail. Oh, and he's back with the victim. And people begin asking themselves, what are we doing wrong? We all just broke our backs.
That's great.
And it wasn't like we didn't convict the perpetrator, yet somehow he's out again molesting other children. What's wrong with the story?
It's wonderful that you're doing so much good for people, too. I love to see that. I love to see people help out.
That's why they realized that they had to do something, that there was a missing piece of the equation. All these things, yes, law enforcement, psychologists, all these different things need to be used to fight child abuse. But they realized that there were enormous flaws in the legal system and legislatively in the actual laws that were not benefiting these kids, that were really working to the kids' disadvantage.
That's horrible.
And so they said, well, wait a minute, everybody's got a lobby, right? I mean, what is it, clean air, cigarettes, oil, guns, whales, they've all got a lobby. There's always somebody in Washington with the briefcase saying, pass my bill. But not for kids. And so National Association to Protect Children got formed in, like, gosh, was it 2002, 2003, and there's a guy named Greer Weeks, who's the executive director. And the actor David Keith is now one of our people.
Oh, David Keith. I remember him.
Oh, God, David Keith has raised us so much money. I just want to kiss his feet every time I see him. David Keith down there in Knoxville, he's one of our main guys. He's our patron saint. And we got this thing going, and next thing I know, I'm on the phone with Greer, and he's telling me, well, you know, we passed the law in North Carolina, and we'd like to do it in California. And next thing I know, I'm sitting there in the Senate.
Now, one last question I need to let you go, because I could go on all night talking to you.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what you do in your spare time. And do you have hobbies? Do you have things you do? I mean, I'm sure you go on vacation with your husband. I mean, but do you do
things? I got to tell you, since the book came out, I'm not sure I have any spare time anymore. It's like today, I was sitting here going, I'm like making phone calls while sitting on the
floor. What would you do if you did have that spare time?
When I occasionally do have spare time, it does occasionally happen. I love to read. I like to garden. I grow the most fabulous aroma tomatoes and basil.
Oh, wow.
I don't have any jalapenos this year, but I grew the hottest jalapenos. They were like Santa Fe peppers. They were unbelievable. To cook. I'm a very good cook.
You're very good at a lot of things you do. In fact, everything you do, you seem to give it your best.
I can't sing.
You can't sing?
Can't sing.
Well, give it a try. No, I'm kidding.
Terrible singer. Passing at dancing.
I'm trying to remember if you sang on the show at all.
Yes, badly. And actually, that was funny, because when you try to sing badly, you wind up hitting the note correctly. It's pretty funny. Yes, Nellie famous. Oh, in the kitchen. Oh, yeah.
But do you watch any TV?
I do. I'm crazy for things like The Simpsons. I love Futurama. And my husband and I are both very into all the CSI and CIS stuff. Oh, I love Burn Notice. That's my favorite.
Oh, Burn Notice, yes. A lot of people seem to like that show. That's one of those shows that people are following a lot lately. I mean, there's so many shows now. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and then we do. We tend to watch a lot of the cop shows like those.
You know, it's great to see you happy. It's great to see that everything worked out for you and that you had such a great time in Little House, and we had a great time watching. I mean, everybody wins. And it seems like your life has been an absolute success. Do you feel like it's been 100% success?
Oh, I don't know. It depends. If you compare to other people, and as actors we tend to, and child actors, you're brought up to compare yourself. I'm supposed to have a lot more money than this.
Right.
You know, because when you're growing up in television, you'll be a millionaire. And I'm not a millionaire. So I guess I'm supposed to have a lot more money. So maybe I lost some points.
But you're happy, though. You've got the,
I am.
You're with the guy you love.
I am. And then with the show that I'm doing in the book, I'm not exactly broke. I was going to say I haven't made the $1 million yet, but I'm definitely doing well. And in this economy, to even be doing as well as I am is almost like having $1 million, because, like, everybody's broke. But I have a nice place to live. I got a car. You know, I just bought new luggage. So it's not bad.
Well, this has been an absolute treat. I'll never forget this. I mean, you're just a wonderful person, and this is a wonderful book.
Thank you.
The book, again, is called Confessions of a Prairie Bitch.
Yes.
I love to say that title. How I Survived Nellie Olson and Learned to Love Being Hated. And Allison Arngren's been with us for the whole hour.
It's a great book. You have fun just saying the title.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wait till you read it.
And it's got pictures. It's got pictures in it, too.
That's right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.